All trace of independence or anarchistic spirit must be completely eradicated from the life of all men, and even the wild beasts which are kept by these men. The Laws, 942a-f. This will all appear chillingly familiar to students of the Third Reich and communist regimes from Stalinist Russia to the Cultural Revolution. The political science of dictatorship appears to have developed little over the past 2 millennia since the nursery era of our civilization. Just as the psychology that instigates such states evolves little beyond the nursery stage of its development. For centuries, Plato could do no wrong. While he remained the preserve of the classicists and theologians, such views were considered harmless, except by those who became headmasters of elite boarding schools, who used them as a blueprint for Victorian education. Not until the middle of the 20th century did the Austrian philosopher Karl Popper decide it was time Plato was exposed as a fascist. He did this in The Open Society and Its Enemies, from which the following argument is taken. Individualism, united with altruism, has become the basis of our Western civilization. It is the central doctrine of Christianity, love thy neighbor, say the scriptures, not love your tribe, and it is the core of all ethical doctrines which have grown from our civilization and stimulated it. Plato was right when he saw in this doctrine the enemy of his caste state, and he hated it more than any other of the subversive doctrines of his time. Never was a man more in earnest in his hostility toward the individual. Popper, The Open Society and Its Enemies. Popper quotes the following passage where Plato describes his republic as the highest form of state. Plato continues, "Women and children, as well as all servants, slaves, and livestock, are considered as common property of the state. Every possible means has been taken to obliterate from our life any possible hint of individualism or anything looked upon as private. In as far as it is possible, even the things which nature herself has made private and individual have been transformed into the common property of all. Nothing remains personal. Even our eyes, ears, and hands seem to see, hear, and act as if they did not belong to individuals, but to the collective community. All are cast in the same mould, so that they are identical to each other to the ultimate degree. They give praise or cast blame with unanimous accord. They even rejoice or sorrow over the same things, all together and at the same times. All the laws are perfected with the aim of unifying the citizens to the ultimate degree possible. It is not possible to discover any better criteria for a more excellent form of state. The Laws, 739c et sec. These are not the extremist views of youth, but the considered judgment of wise old age. The Laws is one of Plato's last works. He almost certainly wrote it after he returned from Syracuse for the third and last time. This would put him in his mid to late 70s. Many commentators seem to concur with the view that in The Laws, Plato made concessions to real life, modifying the utopianism of the Republic, Copleston. Leaving aside the question of whether Plato's Republic is a utopia, of any sort, for anyone involved, are these the sort of concessions to real life which we wish to see? A totalitarian state, with mass conformism, has often, alas, been real life for millions of unfortunates, and continues to be so. But for most of us, the concessions to real life we would wish to see in Plato's Republic are of a somewhat different order. All right, since you're not capable of living up to my utopia, I'll give you hell on earth instead, seems to be the gist of Plato's attitude. As I have already suggested, there are strong psychological and historical reasons why Plato believed in such grotesque ideas. But what is the use of philosophy when one of its supreme practitioners advances dangerously wrong-headed notions like this? It is possible to argue that Plato's philosophy, like his world of ideas, transcended his age, whereas his political ideas, like the particulars of the world which we inhabit, were nothing more than a phantasmagoria of spectral half-truths. Indeed, there's no denying that Plato's political ideas were of their time. Athens was under threat, and needed to become another Sparta if it were to survive. Within a decade of Plato's death, it was overrun by the Macedonians. Unfortunately, Plato advocates his paranoid regime during both war and peace, during times of threat, as well as times when there is no threat, in bad times and not so bad times. There could be no such thing as good times under such a regime. Offensive political ideas are not limited to small cities in the Balkans over 2,000 years ago. They continue to flourish. In other words, Plato's political ideas are as timeless as his other philosophy. There appears to be no answer to this. Plato's philosophy was and remains one of the great ornaments of Western civilization. It formulated the questions that philosophy still tries to answer and provided the intellectual foundation for Christian thinking. And yet its social theories are offensive in the extreme. It's no excuse to say that everyone thought like that in those days. They didn't. Plato lived in Athens, the home of democracy. Perhaps all we can usefully say is that Plato's grades should read alpha plus for philosophy, gamma minus for politics. Chronology of Plato's life. Circa 428 BC, birth of Plato on island of Aegina, or in Athens. 399 BC, flees Athens after death of Socrates, travels in North Africa, Middle East, and Italy. Circa 388 BC, at court of Dionysius I, ruler of Syracuse in Sicily. Circa 387 BC, founds the academy in Athens. 367 BC, returns to Syracuse to instruct Dionysius II, but soon flees. 361 to 360 BC, returns yet again to the court of Syracuse. Circa 347 BC, death of Plato at age 81. 529 AD, closing of academy by Emperor Justinian and the start of the Dark Ages. Chronology of Plato's era. 438 BC, Parthenon, built in Athens. 431 BC, free adult male population of Athens calculated at 42,000. The slave population was probably double this. 430 BC, death of Phidias, sculptor and architect of the Parthenon. 429 BC, death of Pericles, ruler of Athens through its golden era. 415 to 413 BC, Athenian expedition to capture Sicily, ending in disaster. 408 BC, Euripides leaves Athens. 404 BC, Peloponnesian wars end in Sparta's victory over Athens. Oligarchy takes over in Athens and ensuing terror. 399 BC, death of Socrates. 384 BC, birth of Aristotle. 380 BC, death of comic playwright Aristophanes. 367 BC, death of Dionysius I, ruler of Syracuse in Sicily. He is succeeded by his son Dionysius II. 353 BC, King Mausolus dies in Asia Minor and is buried in the mausoleum, which becomes one of the seven wonders of the ancient world. Chronology of significant philosophical dates. 6th century BC, the beginning of Western philosophy, with Thales of Miletus. End of the 6th century BC, death of Pythagoras. 399 BC, Socrates sentenced to death in Athens. Circa 387 BC, Plato founds the academy in Athens, the first university. 335 BC, Aristotle founds the Lyceum in Athens, a rival school to the academy. 324 AD, Emperor Constantine moves capital of Roman Empire to Byzantium. 400 AD, St. Augustine writes his Confessions, philosophy absorbed into Christian theology. 410 AD, sack of Rome by Visigoths heralds opening of Dark Ages. 529 AD, closure of academy in Athens by Emperor Justinian marks end of Hellenic thought. Mid-13th century, Thomas Aquinas writes his commentaries on Aristotle, era of Scholasticism. 1453, fall of Byzantium to Turks, end of Byzantine Empire. 1492, Columbus reaches America, Renaissance in Florence and revival of interest in Greek learning. 1543, Copernicus publishes On the Revolution of the Celestial Orbs, proving mathematically that the Earth revolves around the Sun. 1633, Galileo forced by church to recant heliocentric theory of the universe. 1641. Descartes publishes his Meditations, the start of modern philosophy.